Welcome to today's Pacific Basin 2017 first quarter trading updates call. I'm pleased to present CEO of Pacific Basin, Mr. Mats Berglund. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Mr. Berglund, please begin.
Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us for our first quarter trading update today. As mentioned, I am Mats Berglund, CEO, and with me here today is Andrew Broomhead, our CFO.
Good afternoon.
I will talk for about 15 minutes or so, and then we'll open up for questions. First, our rates and our cover for the rest of the year. We generated average Handysize and Supramax TCE earnings of $7,460 and $8,030 per day net in the first quarter, representing 26% and 38% improvement year-on-year, and outperforming the Handysize and Supramax index by 18% and 3.5% respectively. As at 31st March, we have secured cover for the remaining three quarters of 2017. 37% of our 29,500 contracted Handysize days at $8,520 per day, and 65% of our 11,200 Supramax revenue days at around $10,100 per day. Our Handysize and Supramax capacity has increased year-on-year, and that's due to more owned ships that we have taken delivery of, and also due to an increase of our short-term operating activity. We now have about 250 ships on the water, of which we own 99, and it will be 100 when we take delivery of our last new building in May. We have around 30 long-term chartered ships and about 120 short-term chartered ships. 250 ships on the water, soon 100 owned, 30 long-term, and about 120 today on short-term charter. Of the 250 ships, about 150 today are Handysize ships and about 100 are Supramax ships. On the Supramax side, we have a larger proportion short-term chartered ships, and that's partly for that reason why we also report our TCE earnings excluding the short-term operated vessel days and spread that margin over our owned and long-term chartered days. If we do it that way, for the first quarter, our Handysize TCE would be $7,570, and our Supramax TCE would be $8,950, representing 20% and 15% outperformance of the index rates. If we shift to specific activities during the first quarter, we took delivery of six new buildings during the quarter, and as mentioned, we only have one left. Those new buildings are all Japanese and fully financed by Japanese export credit. We have paid the equity in those ships by cash, and we will draw down fully to cover these new building deliveries, the installments that we're doing during the first half this year. We bought one Supramax and sold an older, smaller Supramax, and we also bought recently one Handysize secondhand ship. Good Japanese secondhand ships. We opened an office in Rio, which we're very happy with. Brazil is a very active market for us. Grain and steel exports out of there. and we're very happy now with our fleet, our office network. We are out of substantially all non-core businesses. We've grown our owned fleet and are very well positioned for a cyclical upturn in the market. Turning to the specific market developments, if you look at slide four or page two of the announcement, you have the graph over the spot Handysize index rates. I'll draw your attention to the last 4 months of last year and comparing that with the last 4 months of 2015, you saw a distinctly different development with strengthening rates in 2016 as opposed to 2015. And early in 2017, we have seen the typical weakening of freight rates leading up to Chinese New Year because of less activity out of China and also due to a lot of new building deliveries early in the year. You know, new building deliveries are heavy early in the year because people want a new year model, so to speak. So the combination of Chinese New Year holidays and more new building deliveries typically produces a bottom during the first quarter, and so also this year. But note that we bottomed out 2017 significantly higher than we did during the two previous years. And rates have since then strengthened up to today. The Handysize index rates are about 7.5 a day, and Supramax, the Supramax index is about $8,700 per day. And note that we take off 5% commission when we state those numbers. Now, why are we seeing a strengthening market in recent time? Well, it's partly due to strong U.S. Gulf agricultural exports. We mention 21% year-on-year growth in the announcement. Note, though, that this is a very short period, right? This is just January and February, and we would not anticipate the full year to be so strong. But we have seen a very strong grain volume, both fourth quarter last year and early on this year. We are now seeing U.S. Gulf rates drop, but East Coast to South America is coming on strong, and we hope that that the Atlantic strength will be helped by more volumes out of East Coast South America now. We have also seen strong minor bulk imports to China. We mentioned 24% year-on-year growth for the eight minor bulks that we now typically track into China. But again, this is a short period. This is just January and February, so don't draw too big conclusions from it. But it is strength in. We actually have increases in all the eight minor bulks that we track. The biggest improvement volume-wise is soybean, followed by logs, and then manganese ore, cereal, but we also have increases in bauxite and nickel into China. So demand is good. I mentioned that we have gotten to index rates of 7.5 for Handysize and 8.7 on Supramax. And I'd just like to remind you of our break-even levels on the owned ships. We remind you in our announcement also that, you know, the increase in rates is obviously positive for the for the owned ships and for the long-term chartered ships, but it also, of course, makes the charter in cost for the short-term ships go up as well, just so that you don't forget that. But the break-even levels for the owned ships, for the handy-size ships, as well as the Supramax ships, the operating cost is about $4,000 per day. Now, on top of the $4,000 per day, we have our G&A, right, the office cost. And if we spread that over all our ships, it's about $650, $660 per day, so call it $700. And then we also have depreciation. You know, every 2.5 years we need to dry dockings. Every 2.5 years we need to dry dock the ship, and that comes in as depreciation, but it's a cash cost every 2.5 years or so. That's about $700 per day. So if you add up 4,000 OPEX, 700 G&A, and 700 dry docking, you get to about $5,400 per day. Right. So above $5,400 a day on the owned ships, we start to generate cash, you know, also after dry docking depreciation. To show a profit on a bottom line on the owned ships, we need to also cover interest and depreciation. And interest and depreciation on the ship itself is adding about $3,100 on the handy-sized ships. So we need about $8,500 a day on the handy-sized ships, our largest segment, right? Now, we have gotten to index rates of $7,500, right? So we're $1,000 short. But remember that we tend to outperform the market. And we did that with $1,100 per day in the first quarter. We've outperformed with more than $2,000 per day over the last 5 years. When rates are increasing, our outperformance tends to shrink because we are handicapped a little bit by the previously entered into contracts. And remember that we're always fixing forward, right? So what we fix now is showing up in our P&L, you know, 45 days forward or something like that on average. So we have a little bit of lag when we compare with the index rates, right? Our earnings and index rates are not absolutely apples and apples. But what I'm communicating is that we are well above the cash break-even levels, right, on the owned ships. We're well above the 5.4, and we're getting to a level where spot index rates combined with our outperformance are getting to break even or profitability if rates stay here on the owned ships. And we do disclose these break even levels both on our handy-sized ships and on our Supramax ships in the PowerPoint presentation that is attached. And remember that we just need to add the G&A to these vessel break even levels that you have in the attachments. Now, what's happening on the supply side? What's happening with deliveries and scrapping, etc.? Well, you know, again, the first quarter is not representative for the full year because, you know, deliveries are heavy in the first quarter. So it's a bit misleading to annualize the first quarter. But deliveries so far this year is about the same as last first quarter, but scrapping is lower. So if we look at the full year numbers for last year, you may recall, right, that we got new building deliveries of about 6% of the fleet, and we got scrapping of about 4% of the fleet last year for a net fleet growth of 2%. Right, so last year we had 6 minus 4 scrapping for a net fleet growth of about 2%. Now, this year, again, we're tracking the new building deliveries about the same. We think that will slow down because new building deliveries are extra front-heavy this year, and the order book is gradually shrinking. So we think that we may get around 5% deliveries, 4.5%-5% deliveries this year. Scrapping has logically slowed down due to the higher freight rates. But if we do annualize the scrapping that we've had so far, it would be around 2% or 2.5%. So with 4.5%-5% deliveries and 2%-2.5% scrapping, we may get a net fleet growth this year of 2.5%, maybe 3%, so maybe slightly more than last year due to lower scrapping. But ordering continues to be very limited, right? So the new building deliveries continue to reduce. So next year, 2018 and 2019, we will continue to have fewer and fewer ships delivering from the yards. The new ordering for the first quarter, if we annualize that, it was 0.4%, right? So very little ordering still, and we like for that to continue. The shortfall continues to be very high, right? The stated order book is much higher than the actual deliveries. You know, we saw some 46% or something shortfall also in the first quarter in total dry bulk. So the stated order book will not deliver. It continues to be much fewer ships that actually materializes. Many people ask us, will the ballast water treatment regulations affect the scrapping, and is that going to have a major influence? It will have an influence. It will be positive as regards pushing out the worst ships, the oldest ships, the poor design ships, because it will be another CapEx cost on top of already maybe expensive dry docking costs. But it will not kick in all at once later in 2017 when the IMO rules kick in, because it comes in at the next dry docking thereafter, and there's various ways to push it out. So to give you an example, in our case, we are planning to start to install ballast water treatment systems early 2019, and that will be spread over a 3 to 4 year period before we have gone through all our owned ships. And it's more the U.S. Coast Guard regulations that possibly will set the deadline. As more and more systems are being approved by Coast Guard, they will be more restrictive in giving exemptions from not having the ballast water treatment systems. We have exemptions through 2018 from the U.S. Coast Guard, and hence our plan is to start to install the systems early 2019, and it will be spread over a period. I like to turn to vessel values, and you have a graph on that on slide 7, showing both new building values and secondhand values. And, you know, here we're showing that the Handysize new building is $20 million, and this is as per the Clarkson data, which is kind of I guess, an average between China and Japan, et cetera. In Japan, though, the Japanese yards are now asking $23 million for a Handysize new building, while a 5-year-old Handysize ship is valued at $14 million by Clarkson Plato, even if you pay $15 million. it's still significantly below the new building price. If you take 14 or 15 million and you divide that with the 23 million that you need to pay in Japan today, that's only 60 or 65%, which is a very attractive historical data point to buy a second-hand ship. Remember, in a strong market, a five-year-old ship tends to be same value as a new building or even higher than a new building. Our point is that it's still more attractive to buy a second-hand ship than to order a new building. And note that although second-hand values have come up from extremely low levels last year to where they are today, we are still below the low of 2013, right? And 2013 was historically extremely low. So there's still a lot of upside in our view on second-hand prices. New building prices, you know, the shipyards are not queuing up to take orders at 20 million because you cannot build a ship for 20 million. But rationally, people should still, if they, I mean, one, they should not buy ships, they should buy companies because you need more than ships. You need an organization, you need cargo, you need a lot, which takes a lot of time to build up. So people should invest in companies rather than ships. But if they absolutely need to invest in ships, you know, buy a second-hand ship. We're hoping that there will be some new build ordering. There are people that are getting interested, and, you know, the Japanese yards will find ways to get some orders. But we do believe that it will continue to be limited, and we are really, you know, reaching out to the shipping community to plead for letting the market come to us this time. Let freight rates come to a level where we can make some money, and not for 1 month, but for years, right, before we go out and order new ships again. To wrap up, we believe that we are past the worst in the dry bulk cycle, and there are positive indicators on the demand side of the equation. We believe that grain will continue to grow strong. We believe in construction material. There's infrastructure investments, the One Belt, One Road. There's infrastructure potential in the U.S., etc. Good strong demand early on this year in minor bulks, as we mentioned. But we do want to remind people that we do have still lingering oversupply. We want to warn for the risk of new ordering prematurely, and the potential, not the least, by further increased speed, right? There remains surplus capacity in the existing fleet by way of higher speed. And if we do get freight rates that are higher than they are today, you know, that extra speed will come in and will supply extra tonnage by way of further speed. So hence, more patience, scrapping, and lack of ordering are required for a more fundamental market balance to be sustained, is what we continue to say. But past the worst, and it's looking better. And with that, we would like to open up to questions. Operator.
We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for any of today's speakers, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask your question. If you find that your question has been answered before it is your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the question. First question comes from the line of Mohsin Gadit of Archon Capital. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just two quick ones for me. Possible to disclose what the cash balance is today, and then possible to disclose what you paid for that Supra, the secondhand Supra and secondhand Handysize that you bought, and the Supra that you sold. Possible just to provide the cash numbers associated with that?
So with the annual results announcement at the end of February, we disclosed the cash balance at that time. So the 31st of December, our cash balance stood at 269, but we don't give a further update at the interim. I'm afraid you'll have to wait until the end of July for that one. In terms of the prices, these prices are within the stock exchange's notification level as opposed to having to give any information. So you'll appreciate prices are sensitive in the markets, commercially sensitive. So we choose to not to give that information, which may assist our competitors.
But
Okay, thank you.
good secondhand Japanese ships. On the cash balance, just to repeat, right, that the installments on the new buildings are fully covered by Japanese export credits, right? So the cash balance at year end, we don't need to use that for these installments, but you do have regular amortizations, et cetera, right? And it's fairly well laid out in the annual report on an annual basis there, what our repayments of loans and stuff are. So you should be able to get comfortable on that.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Gary Tsang of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Hi, Mats. Hi, Andrew. Thank you for the update. I just have one question about the contract covered for Handysize and Supramax. You mentioned about only 37% for Handysize, which is much lower than Supramax. Could you help us to understand, does it mean you expect more upside from the Handysize rigs going forward? Yeah, that's it from me.
Sure. I can contrast the 37% with the 34% that it was at this time last year, right? So it's not less than it was last time. It's important to note that this cover, right, which it's calculated only on the committed days, right? So it looks higher on Supramax, and it's obviously correct that it is a higher percentage of the committed days. But we use a much higher proportion short-term chartering in on the Supramax side, if you understand what I mean, right? So a much bigger proportion of our Supramax activity consists of short-term charter-ins that we combine with the cargo and make a margin, right? We call it operating activity. But we are quite happy not having taken too many contracts in the recent year because the contract levels have been ridiculously low. And while we have protected the most valuable contracts and so on, and the contracts that are very important for our system and to keep our utilization rate and laden percentage high, we have not rushed after contracts. It's important to understand the composition of our fleet, right? So it is correct what you say that we have more upside when freights increase on the Handysize side because we have a larger proportion owned Handysize than we have Supramax. So you may have noticed that during last year, we lost less money on the Supramax than we did on Handysize because we have fewer owned Supramaxes and we use a lot of short term. So last year, when we had 45-year low freight rates, our average cost came down more on Supramax because we're using a lot of short term. I hope you understand the logic there, right? But as the market turns and we're now having increasing rates, we have a larger proportion handy-sized ships with fixed costs, right? The owned and the long-term charters. And we have a smaller proportion short-term handy-sized activity. So as we get above break-even levels, we'll have more leverage, we'll make more money on handy-size, and we'll not make as much on Supramax because we have a smaller proportion owned and long-term chartered ships on the Supramax side. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense. All right,
yeah.
Thank you.
So, correct, we have more upside potential on handy-size when rates go up and we hit that. And this is also why you should kind of have a look at that alternative way to show the TCE on the Supramax side, right? So, you know, our outperformance looks low on the Supramax when we look at the total TCE for Supramax, right? It's only 3.5%. But it's heavily influenced by a lot of short-term operating activity. And, you know, spot rates came down to incredibly low levels during last year. But, you know, the total TCE is not the right KPI for short-term operating activity. The right KPI is the margin. You know, it doesn't matter if we charter in a ship at $2,000 per day, if we can take a cargo against it and make $3,000 per day. You know, we're making a margin. The $3,000 per day gross TCE is reducing the total TCE, if you understand what I mean. But that doesn't really matter, right? And that's why we're presenting also this alternative way where we take the margin and we spread it over the core fleet. You know, it's also because some of our competitors are showing it that way. And it's specifically important on Supramax, and you see that the difference between these two methods makes a much bigger difference on Supramax than it does on Handysize. Our Handysize activity is less operating. The ships are more trading in a system. It's more contract and relationships and so on, and there's less volatility in the Handysize rates. So when freight rates go as low as they did last year, we don't suffer as much on Handysize as we do on Supramax. Next question, please.
Next question comes from the line of Inderpreet Walia of Lloyd's. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. As you've mentioned that you would look for opportunities to renew the fleet, do you have any specific plans or budget allocated for it?
We have taken delivery of 18 new buildings, the last one coming in May, right, fairly recently. So we don't have a necessity to renew our fleet. We have a young fleet. We will continue to opportunistically look at attractive second-hand opportunities. As we explained, we see it more attractive to buy second-hand ships today than new buildings. But, you know, barring some extraordinarily attractive you know, block deal or M&A opportunity or something like that, we have done so much already, right? We have tripled our own fleet over the last 5 years. We have gone from 34 ships 2012 to 99 ships now and 100 ships in May. So we are already extremely well positioned in our view for an upturn in the market, and we will, you know, we feel that we shall deliver on what we have done, and we want to be able to pay a dividend to our patient shareholders, etc. So that's kind of what we're guiding, right? We may buy a ship or two if we see some attractive opportunities, ships that we know, ships that we've had on charter maybe, like we have done recently with the one Supra and the one and it says they may be like an arbitrage opportunity to sell one and buy another and trade up if the opportunity is good, etc. But we don't think it's attractive to order new buildings vis-a-vis second-hand, and we have done so much already, so we want to deliver on what we have done unless there's something extremely attractive out there that we can look at.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Varun Ginodia of J.P. Morgan. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Thanks for taking my question. My question is regarding your chartered-in cost for short-term and index-linked vessels. I just wanted to check these chartered-in cost. Is it fair to assume, you know, them to closer to the spot rates in the market, since that is what you are paying for those vessels, or do you get some discount, or is there a lag on that? You know, like how to forecast that going forward? Should we assume some discount, or is it fair to assume closer to the market rates for those vessels?
Andrew, you can pitch in as you see fit, right? But you know, as a rough guide, the index rate may be a good guide, but it may well vary, right? Because this is opportunistic activity, and you know, we sometimes take a ship for one leg, one direction, right? And if you take in a ship in for a backhaul cargo, you know, you may be able to get it almost for nothing, so to speak, right? Because you're helping the owner to position it into a load area. So, you know, but as a rough guide, it definitely follows the spot rates. But, you know, it sometimes may be overweight, you know, backhaul positions that we take in, and that may be cheaper in other markets, other opportunities. We may do operating activity on a front haul, and we may pay more than the spot market. Again, the right KPI for this activity is to make a margin, right? Not the absolute TCE. And that's why we're trying to help you guys as much as we can, right, with pointing out the difference in the composition of the Handysize fleet vis-a-vis the Supermax fleet, etc. And you should always be aware that of the 250 ships, right, 100 are owned. You have the costs very well laid out in the annual report. On the 30 long-term charters, you have the costs very well laid out in the annual report, Andrew, page 27 or something. You have year by year what the rates are and how the days reduce year by year. And then you have this short-term operating activity, which you should, in my view, look upon as a margin business. You know, if we do that well, we should be able to make a margin in any market. We can't guarantee that. You know, we had a period with the winter 13-14 when we lost money on this, right? We got the positions wrong and we were surprised by a sudden spike in the market. But you know, since then we've been able to make a margin. The margin can vary, etc. But I think that's a logical way to look at our fleet. And you know, 130 kind of fixed rate vessels is tremendous leverage on an improving freight market that we hope to see going forward.
So the index to vessels are fixed on a monthly or repriced on a monthly basis. So yes, they track what's happening in the spot market quite accurately. For the short term days, then it does depend on the period. We, you know, clearly define short term in the conventional sense of being less than 1 year. But the reality is the fixtures that we're doing are much less than that. So they may be at the 3 or 6 month category. So from that perspective, on the day that we fix the cost, which is then close to the spot rate, we then live with that cost for that following period of time. So if the market rates continue to rise very strongly for a short term, then we would be paying a rate that would appear to be a bit less. But if the rates have consolidated or weakened over, say, a period where the demand has softened and brought the rates down, then our rates will be, you know, commensurate to the fixing period. But in a simple summary, then I would use the spot rate as the guidance when you look at the total chartered in cost and you're calculating the estimated cost for the short-term days.
Got it. Thank you.
Just to highlight the complexity a bit further, right? And we apologize for that, but that's the way the market works, right? If you look at slide 5, you have both the Handysize and Supramax spot rates split up by the Atlantic and the Pacific. And if you look during, you know, the last fourth quarter, you had, you know, massive difference between the Atlantic rates and the Pacific rates. So, right, if we do a lot of operating activity in the Atlantic, you know, these costs, but also the revenue will be much higher, right? So it's a bit fluid, and it's just finding an arbitrage using our skilled people in our office network who speaks to shippers about cargoes and our tonnage guys finding a good ship at a good rate to combine it with and make a margin. That's what it's all about, this operating activity. Next question, please.
Next question comes from the line of King Tan of Daiwa Capital. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Good evening, Mats and Andrew. Just one quick question on the outperformance, the dollar margin that you earn. Looking at sort of the price, the spot rate chart for 2015, 2016, 2017, the first quarter, it seems to be, you know, different sort of, I guess, absolute levels, but the trends are the same, where it dipped during Chinese New Year and rebounded, you know, maybe not quite back to the beginning of the year, but certainly a rebound. I'm just comparing the dollar margin that you've earned in the first quarter of 2015, 16, and 17. So 15, 16, it's about sort of $2,000, $3,000 a day, so roughly about $3,000 on average. 2017 is about 1,000, so it's quite a bit sort of under that, you know, in the last 2 years. I'm just wondering whether you can sort of give some more sort of insights into that. You mentioned the difference between Atlantic and Pacific, so I'm not sure whether, you know, that explains some of it as well. Just some color would be great.
Yeah, I think a quarter is too short period to analyze from this perspective, much due to the kind of 45-day lag that I mentioned, right? So I'm not sure if I explain it properly enough, right? But kind of the index rates, we obviously take the index rates for these 3 months, right? And we just calculate the average. But our earnings during this time is not fixed during the same 3 months. It's fixed on average 45 days earlier. So you have these lag effects. But, you know, some overall guidance is that with a market that's been trending down for quite a period, the higher paying cargo contracts that we have had, that we have had the benefit of is reducing, right? And as the market turns and then starts to go up, those cargo contracts have the reverse effect, right? So if we still had the benefit of a cargo contract, you know, entered into 3, 4, 5 years ago, that helped a lot during the previous years. Those have now expired and they have gradually been replaced by contracts you know, taken during lower market years, and last year was the worst market year in 45 years, right? So as the market now turns up again, you know, those cargo contracts handicap us, and it takes a while before these lower rate contracts expire and we replace them with higher again, right? So hopefully that makes some sense. You know, it would be unfair also not to mention that, you know, the competition in the market has been absolutely brutal in recent years, right? So the ability to make a margin and to outperform has become, you know, tougher and tougher. There's just, you know, brutal competition for cargo contracts, and we've just had a big oversupply of ships versus cargoes, and that's why the market was so low, right? So that's the rough guidance. I mean, we have in the past always produced an outperformance. It's a pattern that you can follow, that, you know, in a reducing market, our outperformance widens, it increases, and in an increasing market, our outperformance shrinks. But it will always be there over a longer period of time. We have quarters where we had underperformance, but, you know, that's due to specific reasons and lag and things like that. But you should look at it over a bit longer time to eliminate the effect of short-term stuff and lag. Andrew, anything to add to that?
When you look at slide 13, which talks about the ability to perform, you can see that the margin that we achieve above the index, it's not a constant dollar amount. It does flex with the effect with the amount of cover we have. So you can see, for example, in 15, the point that Max is talking about, where higher value cover has certainly contributed to a significant outperformance, but then as the market recovers, then you see that outperformance compresses. I think what's most important is that we have a business model that enables us to generate outperformance. Most of our competitors only can dream of doing that. So if you get the model there and then you execute it properly, then the outperformance comes. That's what we focus on, as opposed to trying to maintain a percentage or a dollar amount.
A big chunk of this outperformance is by better utilization of the ships, right? It's by getting to the 90% plus laden, you know, of all the days at sea, you know, we reach above 90% laden. So it's not all about cargo contracts. It's primarily about, you know, efficient use of the ships and finding these cargo combinations, cargo in and cargo out. And to do that, you need the scale, you need the worldwide office network, et cetera. It's not because people pay us more because we are more beautiful. It's very hard to do that, you know, in a commoditized market like this. So we build our premium not by charging our customers more. We sometimes charge them less, by being able to combine cargoes in and out and get the high utilization rate. But there is an effect of the cargo contracts, and now when rates are increasing, we have a bit of a lag because of the handicap of the previously entered into contracts, which are lower than today's market.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
The next question comes from the line of Angela Chuk of the Apple Daily. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Hello. May I clarify that because you have said that the cost of the daily rate is to be a break-even level is $5,004 per day. And do you mean that if it is the first quarter level rate, then you will be able to make a profit this year? Thank you.
Yeah, I mentioned $5,400 per day as the level when we start to generate cash on an EBITDA basis, and that is also after dry dock depreciation on the owned ships, right? It doesn't include the chartered ships. And I mentioned that the break-even level on a bottom-line basis, also after interest cost on our loans and depreciation of the vessel itself, is about 8.5 a day on the Handysizes and 9.2 on the Supramaxes. Right. So on the Handysizes, our biggest segment, right, where we own 78 ships. So, you know, most of the 100 ships we own are Handysizes. Index rates are now 7.5, right? And if we outperform with, we outperformed by $1,100 per day in the first quarter, you know, we are getting to that profitability level on the owned ships if rates stay here. You know, we were not there during the first quarter since we have the dip during Chinese New Year, but we want to help you to assess, you know, at what point we get into profitable territory by providing this these break-even levels. But the 5.4 is not the profit break-even level. That's the level above which we start to generate the contribution to interest and capital on the owned ships. So we're well into that territory. Next question, please.
Next question comes from the line of Joe Liu of Deutsche Bank. Go ahead, please ask your question.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening, Matt. Relatively simple question. I'm trying to reconcile the number of days in terms of capacity for your Handysize and Supermaxes. So 38,220 days in 2016 versus what was disclosed in the annual report, which is 47,590 days. Could you please help me with that reconciliation?
Yeah, that date, sorry if it's confused you, that date for 2016 is not the full year. That was the number of days disclosed at the equivalent first quarter trading update a year ago when we had not fully contracted during the course of the year. So it's rolling back 1 year. It is not supposed to be full year number.
So similarly, 41,900 days for 2017, that's not your full capacity for 2017, is it?
No, that's contracted at the moment, and as we continue during the year, we will find vessels, short-term vessels, typically to bring in, and that will increase the total revenue day generating capacity and contracted amount. Yes. So as we, when we do the interim announcement, that number will have undoubtedly increased.
Okay. Understood. Thank you.
There are currently no questions. As there are no further questions, we will now begin closing comments. Please go ahead, Mr. Mats Berglund.
Just to thank you again for your attendance and your interest in our company. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending.